Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Coming up, Michael Kist will join us. That'll be at 12:15. Austin Price at 12:45. John McClain today at 1 o'clock. Brett Hudson covers Mississippi State Athletics and works with Matt Wyatt in Starkville for the Dogpile Podcast. Nice enough to join us as we go through a few of the Bulldogs in this draft. And when I say a few, there's a handful that's going to be drafted in the first or second round in a couple of weeks right here in Nashville. Brett, how are you, man?
I'm good. I know if you're bringing me on, you're talking defensive guy. I know that.
Yes. Well, there's quite a few, man. And let's just start with Jeffrey Simmons, who I know was, I believe, the number one rated player out of high school in Mississippi. Ends up at Mississippi State. Goes on to have quite the career. Fantastic athlete. And then tears his ACL in February. What's been the mood around that development? And how much does that affect the overall outlook for what he can be at the next level?
Yeah, I actually saw the Ian Rappaport tweet either earlier today or late yesterday that he's now sharing his MRI results with NFL teams. Everything I'm hearing out of that camp seems like things are going pretty well. And, I mean, we've all seen ACL injuries. We as a society are getting better and better at making that rehab more consistent, more effective. And I think everyone remembers the Adrian Peterson example. Now, the fact that he tore his ACL in February tells you that he's not going to be ready for week one in all likelihood, but you're also not drafting guys for week one of their rookie year. You're drafting them for 4 or 5 years down the road. And with Jeffrey Simmons, the way I always describe him is he's the prototypical defensive lineman for this modern era of football where we don't have room for just 350-pound space eaters anymore to just take up two gaps on the offensive line and force a fullback to go somewhere else with their block. He is very mobile, but huge for his size. He's very mobile there. So he's that kind of guy who can read a screen and go get out to the sideline and pursue it and maybe even be involved in the tackle out there. He's that guy, and he's got the motor, too. When he gets into the backfield, he doesn't just sit in the gap and wait for the running back to come to him for a loss of one. When he gets back there, he's going to chase the ball. He's going to make it a loss of 4 or 5 when he gets a tackle for loss. He's the prototypical defensive lineman, and I'm sure his eventual draft position will ultimately fall because there is a good chunk of his rookie season that will probably be unavailable to an NFL franchise. If not, the team just puts him on the IR and lets him take an entire season to recover. But eventually, I still think he will be that guy that is a perfect fit for NFL defenses for many, many years to come.
No, you can only feel sorry for yourself for a little while after an injury like that. Costs him some money, costs him some draft status. What's he like as a guy? What's your sense of how he dealt with all of that?
Yeah, well, he's used to dealing with adversity in his life. You know, I think when people think of Jeffrey Simmons, a lot of people will think of that incident he had in between high school and Mississippi State. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can Google it. It's pretty well documented by myself and others. He's kind of had to be the beacon of society. He's had to be the role model student, the student athlete in this community, and he's been exactly that. He's a very well-tempered guy. He handles himself well in the public light. He does all the community engagement and working with kids and things like that. He's just got a good temperament to the point that there was a coaching change here in Starkville, right? Went from Dan Bowen to Joe Moorhead this year, brought in a lot of new staff members. And a lot of those staff members had no idea of what had happened in his past. It took them like 6 months for someone to tell them what had happened with Jeffrey Simmons back in high school. They just saw the kids that they were working with in the facility every single day, and they just assumed that he was the model citizen that he was being for them. So I think whoever gets him, yeah, there will probably be some reporting and some questions asked about his past, but I'm assuming that whatever franchise gets him will get the same version of him that Mississippi State had for 3 years, which is a fantastic player on the field and a fantastic person off of it.
Last two seasons, Montez Sweat, 29.5 tackles for loss, 22 quarterback sacks. When you watched him play up close, how much of that was benefit for him to play on a line with Jeffrey Simmons? How much of that was great individual play by Montez Sweat?
He's fantastic. He's a ridiculous pass rusher. I mean, if you just look at his body top to bottom, he was built to be a pass rusher because his arms are so long. So he wins the point of contact pretty much every time. And this is against SEC linemen. Now, granted, the NFL has better ones. I think we all know that. But his arms are still long enough that I don't think he'll have an issue at the point of contact in the NFL. And what he likes to do, and he said this in the past, is he likes to give that jab step vertical and then crash into someone's chest and kind of turn a speed rush into a power rush or a bull rush, which what makes it really devastating when he uses it is he has that ability to get vertical and beat you around the edge. So when he gives you that hard first two steps up the field, as a left tackle, you have to respect that. You have to kind of turn your hips kind of vertical with the field and make sure you protect that edge. And then once you do that, he can put his helmet right in your chest and drive you back into the quarterback. When he didn't get an actual sack, he was often affecting the pocket because that tackle just backs up right into the quarterback. So he has the arm length to win at the point of contact. He has the speed to beat you around the edge, and he's got the power to straight up move you if you get yourself in a bad position and you allow him to do that. So yeah, he certainly didn't see as many double teams as he would have had Jeffrey Simmons not been on the interior of the defensive line. But this defensive line was ridiculously deep and awesome last year. So it's not like there were two guys on the line that you could just ignore. They were excellent across the board. So it wasn't a one-man show at Starkville this year.
The one question I've consistently seen about Sweat, not a question so much as the thing that is on the concern line for him from a lot of people, is about his flexibility. Is that something that was talked about during his career there, something he worked on a lot, or you think he probably is what he is in terms of his bendiness?
Well, I guess it's hard to nitpick when you produce the way
sure
he did. That wasn't something that was critiqued in his time here. I think that's fair to say. So that bend, I guess it's up to each NFL franchise to see if that bend, or if they perceive a lack of mobility, if they think that could be an issue in run stopping. But at the same time, when you're drafting Montez Sweat, you're drafting him to be a pass rusher, and whether you try to develop him to be a run stopper is kind of dependent on the given franchise and what their hopes for him are. It's an interesting point, though, because with all the pieces this defensive line had, I mean, every defensive lineman has some sort of run responsibility, but it wasn't Montez Sweat's responsibility on every given down. He wasn't a pass rush specialist, but by usage, but that's definitely what he's best at. There's no denying that.
Fred Hudson covers the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Jonathan Abrams, he was a former high school quarterback. He is quite the athlete. He's labeled as an enforcer at strong safety. But, Brett, I think he can play both safety spots. He's not just a run stopper, as many have him labeled, and he is quite the athlete whenever he gets going out there.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely best in situations where you do allow him to be useful and active in your run stopping. But and that's where playing for Bob Shoup last year helped him so much. So as a junior, he plays for Todd Grantham, who blitzes on 110% of his snaps So Jonathan Abram was constantly in opposing backfields last year, or in 2017. Last year under Bob Schuch, don't get me wrong, he still blitzed a pretty good bit. He was very violent in the pocket. But they do play some kind of drop zones and kind of force guys to play true coverage, particularly on first and second down. And he was, at the very least, competent in that regard all season long. So I think it would behoove a franchise to allow Jonathan Abram to do both, to allow him to be that safety that you move around and kind of create chaos with. And he actually had to do a little bit of that for Mississippi State last year. Injuries forced him to play nickel for two or three games there at the end of the season. So he's best when you allow him to be all over the field and do things different ways, as opposed to just being a true cover safety or just being a true blitzing safety. Why not use him in every part of the game if you can?
Elgton Jenkins, Big E, on the offensive line, has played every offensive line position, I think, throughout his college career. I think he started at tackle, then he moved inside to guard, and then finished up his career at center. Is he strictly a center, or can he play multiple spots?
I think he's going to be a center in the NFL, but I love his game. I love how he transitions, because it's not something you see a ton at the college game anymore for a multitude of reasons, but he can pull from the center position. You saw that all the time. It opened up a ton of offensive line schemes, a ton of versatility in the run game over the last two seasons. Both Dan Bullen and Joe Moorhead used him as a puller. And when you have someone who's athletic enough at that size to pull after snapping the ball and then cover that ground to get out there and make a good block on that pull, that's a guy that certainly has the athleticism to translate to the next level for me. Now, I know he's probably not going to be a guy that's drafted in the first two rounds. I get that. But he also strikes me as that kind of guy that's going to get drafted maybe fourth round somewhere, give or take, and he can end up being on that roster for a long time, because he presents you with so many different weapons and he can do so many things to stay on the roster. You mentioned the positional versatility, but also just that ability to move and execute different schemes. So I mentioned the pulling ability earlier, but this is still a Joe Moorhead offense. There's a lot of zone in this scheme, and he executed that stuff pretty well and was a pretty good communication leader as well, and all that, the zone concept. So he really, I don't see him having a problem translating to the NFL, just because the course of his career forced him to do so many things, and he proved his ability to do all of them on film.
Brett, how can we follow you on Twitter, man?
It's Brett_Hudson. It's a big weekend in town this weekend. It's a spring game for the football team. The baseball team is rocking and rolling, top 10 in the country. But we'll get our first look at year two for Joe Moorhead this weekend. Everything's on Twitter, Brett_Hudson.
Appreciate the time, man. Great insight.
Happy to help. Thanks, Thank you.